media right now. The reason to discuss right now, a little bit that I've been able to put together, is that particularly in Tzvas, there is an Arab college there, and apparently the students there there has been some trouble between the students there and the yeshiva in Tzvas. And in addition, there are indications from stories that we're getting over here that Arab individuals or groups are attempting to do what used to be known in America as blockbusting. In America, this is a term back in the 60s and 70s, that if there was a neighborhood which was, let's say, an entirely white neighborhood, so sometimes minority groups would begin by renting an apartment or by buying a place within a white neighborhood. And after several houses or apartments went to a minority group, that would block bust, it would bring down the price of the property because people got nervous because there were so many changing neighborhoods. So that was a term called blockbusting. So in Tzvas is an attempt also that there are Arabs who are willing to pay very, very high prices, and hugely inflated prices for certain properties. And it becomes very attractive to a family who's living in, just getting by. And the goal apparently is, my information is all second, third hand, but the goal apparently is that after establishing a foothold in a neighborhood, a few houses go to Arab owners, especially since there's been trouble between the Arab students of the Arab college there, so that would begin to erode the prices. And it's a worthwhile investment to pay an inflated price right now, because in a short period of time, the prices of the houses in the nearby area will sink very, very significantly. So this has been going on for at least 2 years. And apparently, about 2 years ago, the Rav of Tzvas came out with a psak that people who are not Jews are not allowed to sell or rent their homes to non-Jews. And I don't think so much was made of it in the media, but apparently very recently, from what was told to me, is all second or third hand information, that one of the neighbors, the chief rabbi at Tzvas, in fact rented or sold his house to Arab students, and he put pressure to oust that or to unravel that sale, whatever, and that did get to the media and became an issue in the media. As a result, a significant number of Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael, again the numbers of exactly how many changed with the which report you read, came out to support the chief rabbi of Tzvas, that he's being vilified as a racist and being demeaning of minorities. So a group came out to support. Once the group came out to support the chief rabbi of Tzvas, then an even larger number of Rabbanim, I don't know if it's well, but certainly in America as well, and from all backgrounds, some who are Rabbanim, some aren't Rabbanim, signed on to criticize the position of the chief rabbi of Tzvas. So that's what's being bandied about in the newspapers. And the position of the chief rabbi Tzvas obviously be taking a beating in any democratic culture or society. At one point it was reported that Rav Yoshev supported the chief rabbi Tzvas, but that was apparently an erroneous suggestion. And recently, the more recent interviews of Rav Yoshev was both Rav Yoshev and Rabbi Eli Shteyman were both critical of their rabbis who signed on to support the chief rabbi of Tzvas.
So they should take their pens away.
Right, Rav Yoshev was quoted as saying that not every rabbi should have a pen, or rabbis should have their pens taken away from them, that they're signing things they shouldn't be signing. What is the core issue of yours? Al Pidin, there are really two issues. What I'd like to discuss is the two issues Al Pidin, and then develop an approach that Rav Herzog, the first chief rabbi of the state, the second chief rabbi of Israel in modern times, developed in one of the Svarim that he wrote, that was a sefer written to be a blueprint for the halachic structure of a state. the two issues can be described. One is the blockbusting issue that was discussed in amongst the American poskim. Is it mutter for a Jew within a certain within a neighborhood that is predominantly Jewish, let's say, or predominantly white? Is it permissible for a Jew to sell or rent his home to a minority group that would, in that case, begin to create an alternate in the neighborhood, and that it's projected would begin to create a sense of fear of concern or concern amongst the present residents, and that would therefore bring down the prices? So that's an issue that has merits on both sides. The Lubavitcher Rebbe Zatzal wrote in one of the journals, this goes back probably 30 years at least, that he thought that it was prohibited. And he argued that since the Gemara of Basra discusses and Shulchan Aruch quotes that people living within neighborhoods cannot inflict damages on other members of their neighborhood by virtue of the way that they use their property. In other words, an easy example, a person lives in a cul-de-sac. And is it mutter for me? I live in a cul-de-sac. Can I open up a day school in my house? So Alpidin, the answer is Alpipash is no, I can't, unless I get permission from the members of the cul-de-sac. Why? Because when you buy a house in a cul-de-sac or you rent an apartment in a cul-de-sac, you expect a very limited amount of traffic and a limited amount of usage. Now that I opened up my day school, so every morning, every afternoon, there are going to be busloads of kids coming. We're going to have parents coming. The whole nature of the traffic of the cul-de-sac changes. The way that one lives in the cul-de-sac changes, and probably the price property changes. So that's Bava Basra. Gemara Basra says one isn't allowed to do that. The Gemara then has to balance that with the right of a person in a livelihood. Am I allowed to? Can I open up a store in my house on a cul-de-sac? I have by buying a house, I have a right to use my house in the Gemara's time as a source of livelihood as well. So the Gemara balances that based on what are the reasonable expectations of the neighbors, and am I in violation of the reasonable expectation of the neighbors? All right, that was the Lubavitcher Rebbe's position, that therefore, if I have a home in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood, then based on that principle, Chayshin Mishpat, I would not be allowed to sell my house or rent my house out in a situation where I would create a degree of discomfort amongst the neighbors, a significant discomfort, a significant loss of property value. It was reported that Rav Moshe agreed with the Lubavitcher Rebbe's approach. It could be argued that when a person buys a house in a democratic society, one that does not limit the sale of the house based on one's race, so the part of the value of the house incorporates whatever risk there is. And if I buy a house in a neighborhood, so the price value is could be based on the present culture and clientele, but in a democratic society, there is always a built-in risk factor that culture can change. So one could argue that the position of the Lubavitcher Rebbe has to still be fully understood as to whether that in fact is in fact a mainstream view, or is it a Das Yochanan, and would there be other opinions in Halacha. So that's one issue that has to be analyzed in the context of what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a democratic society. There is no limitation. There is no one isn't allowed to determine whom one will sell based on race or status of the person, and therefore is there a prohibition? Would there be an iser of selling or renting one's home to an individual which may cause or may begin to cause people leaving, and may begin to cause a loss of value? Do we say, like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that based on the sugyas and Bava Basra, it's oser? Or would we say that that's part of the expected risk and exposure that anybody has when they buy or sell a house, and therefore it cannot impose as a limiting factor? In Eretz Yisrael, there's an additional concern. And that's what you have in front of you, and that's the Rambam Hilchos Avodah Zarah. There the Rambam records the din that we have in Masechet Avodah Zarah. Ein Moichrim Lehem, a person cannot sell to Oivdei Avodah Zarah, but Tim V'Sodos V'Eretz Yisrael, isn't allowed to sell houses or fields in Eretz Yisrael to those who serve Avodah Zarah. The Rambam writes, U'maskirin Lehem Batim V'Eretz Yisrael, B'Vad Shal Yasu Shchuna. When is allowed to rent out houses, one cannot rent out fields, but one can rent out houses to Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, as long as you will not have a neighbor, is that won't create a neighborhood of Avodah Zarah. Why is one allowed to rent out a house and not rent out a field? The Rambam writes, because mafkiyim and amasras. There are two problems. One is that we've now, if we would rent out a field to an Avodah Zarah, it would end up not producing Krumis and Maisras. It's a violation of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael to be Mafkiya, part of Eretz Yisrael, from Krumis and Maisras. And in addition, one gives them a place to live within Eretz Yisrael. So the Rambam says, if we look at Halacha Dalin, even where it's permissible to rent out a building, that's not a place to live. Rambam gives us three steps, three concerns. Number one, to sell a place for an Avodah Zarah to live within Eretz Yisrael, or it sounds like even within any Jewish neighborhood, that is also because it'll end up bringing about Avodah Zarah into Eretz Yisrael. Also, to sell a building to an Avodah Zarah, so the Rambam says that is. To sell a building is aser. To sell a building is aser, because that's a violation of the pasuk lo yisachanim, and the Gemara dash lo yisachanim in three ways. And one derash lo yisachanim is lo sitim lachanim bekarka. One cannot give them a place to live in Eretz Yisrael. To sell or even rent a field, so that is aser in addition to. Chaniya Bekarka, it's Afkom and Amaisras. That's why even renting is awesome. So those are the three concerns. Leisavi Se'evel Beischa, Leisichonim, and Afkom from Trumais and Maisras. In the situations we're discussing, we're talking about homes, we're talking about Beis Dira. However, we're not talking about Avodah Zarah next, because the Arabs are not of the Avodah Zarah. Arabs serve a monotheistic religion. So therefore, it would seem that this halacha would not apply to the sale of property to Arabs. There's no iser of achnos avodah zarah labayis, and when it comes to a building, there's no concern of leisachonim because they're not avodah zarah. And that's taka with the Shulchan Aruch paskins based on a raavad. Why would we say that the Rambam doesn't paskin that way? Because the Rambam finishes halacha in a very interesting way. And this is what is the crux of the issue. In halacha, hey, the Rambam writes, Mefarnesim aniyah of the Gechavim aniyah Yisrael. Mnei darkei shalom. That when we take care of the poor of Klal Yisrael, so amongst that and that venture as well, we will also take care of the poor of the Gechavim. Look at halacha above. Ein kol advar me'ilu amurim el bizman shegolu Yisrael lebeinu of the Gechavim. The halachas, the aforementioned halachas, are in situations where we are not in control. We are amongst the goyim. Shiyad akum to kifal Yisrael. We're not in control. Avuzman shiyad Yisrael to kifal ayim. But when we are in control, also lonu laniach oiv de gechom beinenu vafilu yoyishiv yeshiva seroi. But when we're in control, so then in Avodah Zarah, a person who serves Avodah Zarah, and Avodah Zarah, they can't even be with us both in Aroi, even temporarily. Not even Shiva Saroi. All right, so far we're still in the clear. Elamai, the next line of the Rambam. Ela adshi kabbal olam sheva mitzvahs shenisavu b'nei noyach. He has to be a ger toyishov shenemar lo yeshu b'yartzach afil lefishah. Vim kibbal olam sheva mitzvahs harveze ger toyishov. Vim kabbalin ger toyishov l'zman sheyevul noyach. So we're stuck. The Rambam is a shita that either a person is in the category of an oivin of avodah zara, or he's in the category of a ger toyishov. There isn't this in limbo situation. The Ravid writes, I don't agree with this Rambam. And in Shulchan Aruch seems to indicate that it's not an either or. There are three sets of goyim. There are goyim who are oivin of avodah zara, who do not, who are pagans. There are, or who may keep some, but not all the Sheva Mitzvahs, right? Then there are Goyim who are not Avodah Zarah next. Can make a bigger category. There are Goyim who are part of the Sheva Umois. Then there are Goyim who are not part of the Sheva Umois, and they're Avodah Zarah next. Then there are Goyim who are not Avodah Zarah next. And then there are Goyim who are Geri Toshav. Because they have gone to a Beis Din, and they are Mekabel Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. So that's the way that the Ravid and the Shulchan Aruch view it. So they would say, so this halacha l'sachanim doesn't apply. We're renting the issue of blockbusting, that could be an issue, all right? The issue of safety to one's neighbors, those are big issues. Those are huge issues. But the issue of it being a unique Eretz Yisraeldik issue, of l'sachanim, the Rambam says off the table, the Shulchan Aruch is off the table. There is a Ramban, l'sivoretz l'simocher litzmisos, which many of the poskim quote, that the Ramban says that that halacha, that posuk is a halacha, one cannot sell Eretz Yisrael forever. Not to a Jew, not to a goy. One cannot, if to a Jew, it'll come back in Yovel. But to a goy, it'll never come back. So it's a violation of Eretz Yisrael. So the Nias Daiti, I don't understand it exactly. Why? Because as long as Yovel is not Noyeg, so selling to a goy, selling to a Jew is the same thing. Once Yovel is noyeg, so what's going to happen? Then every single mecher that's going on now is going to be reevaluated, right? Because what's going to happen is that what are the chances that I actually live with my shevet? I'm living in Tzvas. What are the chances that I belong to the shevet of Tzvas, one of the ten lost tribes? What's the chances? So be Moshe Mashiach, I'm going to have to. We're often going to go to Beis Din. If I bought a piece of property in Zichron Yaakov, we're going to go to Beis Din, and the Shev's going to claim either it was a Mekach Tos, or it was limited to Maisa Mashiach. Right? And then I'll make a countersuit in Beis Din, and I'll say that I want my money back. Either it was a Mekach Tos, that'll be the argument. That'll be one of the big Dine Torah. When any Jew who bought a piece of property before Maisa Mashiach, is it understood that it's only till Yemayis and Mashiach? Or is it understood that there will be some compensation? So the Goyim will have the same din Torah. So they'll come, the Shevet will say it was a Mekach Tos, then the Goy will have to sue in court. But it's not the chances that I sold property of my that actually was my property is extremely, extremely limited. And I don't think it's even Shayach. Because even if I belong, happen to be one of the few members of Don around, and I sell a property from Don, so who said that's my property? It's going to come out that the girl made it into mine? That Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be miyaches me to the original owners? So this I don't understand why that should be an issue of Ortli Simoch HaLitzvizos, but nevertheless it's quoted, Rav Kook discusses it, and Rav Herzog says that when we should make a simple rule, we should, when we establish this, he was writing this before 48, he was establishing a blueprint for the state. He said the state should establish that all sales in Eretz Yisrael are what we would call in America 99-year leases. He doesn't use that term. He uses the term they should be long-term leases, long-term sales, right? But not sales, long-term rentals or whatever. But it should be understood that every sale is a limited sale. Every sale, whenever a Jew to a Jew, Jew to a Goy, all limited like a Yovel system. Right? So he says, that way we can get out of this second issue of Ortli Simochel and Tzmisos. How do we get out of the first issue, though? So this, first of all, again, according to Rav and Shulchan Aruch, not a problem, because we're not dealing with the Avodah Zarah next. According to Rambam, is a fascinating position. The Rambam says, either a person is a... In other words, according to Rambam, it sounds like that unless a person is willing to denounce being an Avodah Zarah, willing to announce in front of Beis Din that they are Geirei Toshav, that they don't accept Avodah Zarah, then they're still in the category of over the Avodah Zarah. Rav Kook has an interesting sheet. Rav Kook suggests that when you have an entire people that have rejected Avodah Zarah, so then they are no longer, even according to Rambam, in the status of over the Avodah Zarah. The way Rav Kook explains the Rambam sheet, he says, appearing in front of the Beis Din for a Ger Toshav is the standard that we use to be certain that this person is not an Avodah Zarah. In other words, the way that it's usually viewed is appearing in front of the Beis Din is the process of Geirus. So a Ger Tzedek has to be Makabel Malchus Shemayim, he has to have Bris, right? He has to bring a Korban, be Moshe Mashiach. A Ger Toshav is a different process, but it's a process. In fact, when we discuss Ger Toshav, there are a lot of issues that are not fully worked out. In other words, a Ger Tzedek can never revert being a Ger Tzedek. Right? He can never become a non-Jew. Ger Tzedek is a Jew. He can never denounce his Kabbalah, so he doesn't do anything for us. He's the Jew. What about a Ger Toshav? Is a Ger Toshav reversible? What happens if in 1990 he appeared on a Beis Din and said, I'm a Kabbalah, or there's going to be most of when there's a Yovel going on, obviously. He's a Kabbalah. Now what happens if 20 years later, decides he wants to become an Avodah Zarah again? So does he become Ois Ger Toshav? What about the children of a Ger Toshav? Are they automatically Ger Toshav? So there is some discussion of the monks. The Brisker Rov discusses this. There's some treatment of it in the Birkas Haram and Malkos in the second parak, I think, discussing these ideas. But it's more pal. It's not clear from Halacha how significant the Chalois Ger Toshav is. What's the status of it? However, what is clear is Ger Toshav requires a process. So usually it's assumed the process is part of becoming a Ger Toshav. So if Cook says no, the process of a Ger Toshav is establishing the certainty with which we know he's denounced of a Nazara. So Cook writes, if I have an entire people, an entire religion which doesn't accept of a Nazara, so that is stronger than coming in front of a Beis Din. If you and your whole culture, all your people, all your friends, have a certain belief and they denounce of it as Zara, I don't need to have a public denouncement. So Rav Kook argues in Mishpat Kohen that we can even satisfy the Rambam's requirement. Now, having learned...
Yaisot Kippur,
it's
not functionally a Sabbath, but the fact that they really are free to do what they want, but the political situation...
We may not be at Kippur right now. Okay. So Rav Hoffman is pointing out is that there's another reason why we may not be subject to halacha vav. Right? This becomes a thorny issue. Whether you'll be willing to say that we have a state, but we're not really in power. So probably politically the rabbanim who signed are not excited about the idea to say that we are not yet tekifa. Right? In other words, those one of Rabbi Yosef's quips. When they asked Rabbi Yosef about signing it, so apparently he said, isn't it interesting that most of the Rabbanim who signed that we can't sell a house in Tzfas are willing to sell Eretz Yisrael to a guy once every 7 years. Yeah. This is the same, similar list, he said. So what Rav Hoffman is saying is that it could be that l'da'avoneinu harav, we may have a state, and we have a government, and we have a prime minister, we have an army, we have a police force, but since we still hold ourselves responsible to democratic principles, and that's not necessarily the ideal form of I wouldn't say it's how to phrase it. That's certainly the ideal form of statehood of Klal Yisrael. Question is, Bismaneinu Onu, is that an ideal form of statehood? So, but we subscribe to that. So, have we already, since we're subscribing to the democratic principles, not because of because it's really imposed upon us by the culture, the Western culture, so maybe we can't say Yad Yisrael Tkif Aleinu, right? So that idea is developed not in exactly the way Rav Hoffman said it, but it's in a parallel way by Rav Herzog, we'll get to in a moment. Before we do Rav Herzog, we should just look at the precedent from Navi. We know that Shlomo HaMelech, after he built the Beis HaMikdash, so he was able to get, to procure different kinds of woods from Hiram Melech Tzor. Right? And after he procured those woods, so the Navi says, you have in front of you Melachim Aleph Perek Tzor, Bosel Yid Aleph, Chira Melech Tzor, Nosa Shloima, Nisa Shloima Vatzei Arazim, Vatzei Vroishim, Ubezov, Gold, Chol Chavtzoi. O Zitain HaMelech Shloima Lechiram, Esrim Ir Be'erez HaGolel. And then Shloima HaMelech gives Chira Melech Tzor 20 cities in the Galil. So according to the Ravid and according to the Shulchan Aruch, it wasn't the Nevada Zarnik. Chiram was one of the Gemara says, was a tzaddik. It was one of the tzaddiki umas oilam. So maybe Chiram and his whole malchus were tzaddik. So that could, but according to Rambam, were they Ger Toshav? So again, it's conceivable that they were. There are the Achronim scrambled to not figure this out. How do you square Moshlem HaMelech with the halach, with the apostle and chumash, it's a chanim, with the drasha, with the gemara pshuta, and he square it. So there's numerous a sort of scramble for different. Most of the discussion takes place in the tshuvas that discuss whether one can sell Eretz Yisrael to a goy shmita time, and that's what I listed over here. The different suggestions that the different kulas that have been developed in the various tshuvas that deal with selling Eretz Yisrael for the purpose of Shemitah. Some of them help for Chiram as well. There is a suggestion that maybe Chiram was a Ger Toshav. Maybe the whole nation was a Ger Toshav. Maybe this is a support for Rav Kook's approach, that even though we don't have any record of the people of Tzor coming in droves to Batidinim, or sending Batidinim to Tzor, to be Makabal, but to be Makabal, their Kabbalas, mitzvahs, but if you have an entire nation that whose king is one of Tzadik Umas Olam, and perhaps he was probably successful in teaching his people, so maybe they have the status of Ger Toshav. So that would even support how the Rambam would learn Pshat in Shlomo HaMelech. Yeah. Right. So the question is, the two issues. Right, and the issues is whether the Rambam would go along with that horror. Right, where often is pointing out is Zimiri in numerous places, very often in the beginning of the Sefer, and sometimes in he'll say whenever he mentioned Goyim in this Sefer. It's also quoted on the side of the Gemara, I think Baba Kama was Lamed Zayin. Kufi Gimel? But, yeah, isn't it quoted fuller before by Hezegoy? Okay, so on the side, the Miri is quoted as saying, the Goyim of the Gemara are not our Goyim. Our Goyim have Nimusim, our Goyim conduct themselves appropriately and have good behaviors. And so there's the question has been raised, whether this Me'iri is the Me'iri's opinion, or whether this Me'iri is the way he got his books published. Because of heavy censorship, if he would say that when he refers to Goyim and Kutum and Aronix, all things we say about them, so that refers to Goyim at that time, who would publish the Me'iri, right? What's fascinating is that the Me'iri was the one Rishon who did not get published, right, till the 20th century. So there are those who argue that he went the furthest to trying to get his books out of censorship, and his books sitting in the Vatican till the 1950s, right before the first Alfred itself from our yeshiva published the very first on Bava Metzia. But till we published it, till Meiri was being published, we only knew of Meiri from the sightings in Shittim Kuvetzes. So it's an interesting phenomenon in history that whether he protested too much, that's a discussion. However, what Rav Hoffman is saying is that if we take the Meiri at face value, so that should be a support for the approach of Rav Kook, that if you have an entire people who are establishing and accepting monotheism, so they don't require the halachas of ger toshuv. Ger toshuv is means that they actually get, are part of the our welfare system. Mitzvah lach yosei. You have a mitzvah to support a ger toshuv. Not just like mefarnes im avducham. There are though I think the Rambam say for mitzvahs rights, and when is mechal Shabbos, I think, to be mechay ger toshuv.
So that's
what there is a line that, correct. There was a line in the Rambam like that. So within Tzorachi and Harav Kook will learn Pshat, but he learns that also just part of the standard. But then Echanami, Rambam is saying is correct. These are all raised questions about whether to say that they are Geri Toshev is Mechudishtek. Echanami. So now what are other suggestions to explain what Shlomo Melech did? So one suggestion is, well, Shlomo, that Tzur is part of Eretz Yisrael. Tzur is not Chutz Laretz. So the Melech Tzur gave Shlomo Melech 20 cities. It was a swap. 20 cities for 20 cities. So they were swapping Eretz Yisrael for Eretz Yisrael. As a machlokes is supposed to, when Chazanish said that would not be mutter. He's selling Eretz Yisrael. So what if I get Eretz Yisrael with Tachlif? But other poskim pointed out that maybe that would, I'm not giving Goyim more access to Eretz Yisrael. I'm just moving around in Eretz Yisrael. Cook quotes in Rav Zalman Shach it's not the Rav Shach that we are familiar with, who suggests that if the Goyim live in Eretz Yisrael already, there's no Iser of Leisachonim, even to a non-Ger, even to a Vodazorni, because he's in Eretz Yisrael. So Mali, if he's in Tveretz Vas, Mali's if he's in Tzor, or if he's in Galil. I was wondering, Lanias Daiti, why we don't resolve this problem with Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer, when Chiram came to look at the cities that Shlomo Melech gave him, so it says in Yud Beis, LeYoshua Be'inav, he was very upset. He says, my brother, what are you giving me over here? They were called, Eretz Kabul means locked in land, swampy land. Right? Swampy land was you couldn't settle swampy land until the middle of the 1900s. And they came to Eretz Yisrael, so they had to start draining swamps. So the pshat of the pasuk is that Shlomo Melech gave him uninhabitable land. He gave them land that they couldn't settle anyways. Exactly why Tzor was didn't react more in a stronger fashion, I don't know. But Tzor said to Shlomo Melech, you gave me land I can't use. Eretz Kabul, it's locked in. So maybe that should be the pshat. I don't know why the Echronim don't suggest that. That he gave them land which they could not use. We weren't mafkif and tumas and maizros, they couldn't move in. Maybe it might not be a violation. Like Sitin Chaniel Bakarka, might not be. Tzorachian. I want to finish off with the Mechudishtik approach of Rav Herzig. Rav Herzig was an enormous person. He was an enormous giant of a goyin. His knowledge in Torah apparently was just mikotze lakotze. He was a man who had accomplished in the secular world as well. He had completed a law degree in England. He was a scientist. He was a marine biologist. We are familiar with Rav Herzig because he was the one who worked hardest on the issue of Tcheles, and he debunked the Reziner's approach and the mollusk approach, which is the more widely accepted approach, is Rav Herzig's approach because of his knowledge in marine biology. He continued Rav Kook's approach of attributing a certain malchus and a stature of malchus the chief rabbi. He's just an enormous, enormous intellect. And an enormous Talmud Chacham, and amongst the svarim that he left us, he had the Heichal Yitzchak, his first two major halachas, and one of the most significant sections of the Heichal Yitzchak is Agunas. He was the address in the post-war years of dealing with all the Agunas who were left over from the war, and Eretz Yisrael, and he was the address, and except for in America where we had other meshivim. But he wrote a whole kuntras on Agunas. Was that?
At
that time also.
There was a Kyle Kavish who was on Kahana.
From Warsaw.
From Warsaw. He compared to Sir Yusuf Rabbi.
And it was Colonel Spector. And Rav Herzig was also instrumental in setting the whole chief rabbinate, the whole system. In fact, the Gdolim that we are familiar with, they were all discoveries of Rav Herzog. Rav Yoshev was a discovery of Herzog, and Rav Waldenberg, and Rav Pesach. Rav Herzog had a group, and Rav Tzal Zsolti, and one of the Goldschmidts. Rav Herzog began to establish around him a cadre of huge Talmidei Chachamim, huge young Talmidei Chachamim, and he would bring to them various issues that came to his table, and they discussed it with him. Rav Yoshev was one of them. Rav Herzog was the one who appointed Rav Yoshev to be the Dayan Le'irarim, the appeals court judge, because the state would not respect the chief rabbinate's court system unless it had an appeals system as well. With Rav Yoshev at the same time or after?
With Rav Yoshev, I'm not sure what he
was saying. So Rav Yoshev, in fact, they asked Rav Yoshev, they were surprised because Al Pi Din, it's hard to find an appeal system within the halacha. So he asked Rav Yoshev, how can you take on the Beis Din Le'irim? So he said that he took it on because the only time the halacha does respect an appeal is if it's a Torah Midvar Mishnah. So he will only he'll follow the halacha of only accepting cases that are Torah Midvar Mishnah. But that again shows the stature and Rav Yoshev and forget who else it was, began to write up the rules that the Badidinim will use for all the issues that are going to come in the state. Rav Yoshev went to, he used to go, I think maybe it was Rav Zsolti, to Bnei Brak once or twice, once a week. There was a huge library over there, and he'd begin to write the blueprint for the Dayanim that will be part of the chief family system. Rav Herzog, in addition to Heichal Yitzchak, and in addition to volumes of tshuvas that were put in after his life, he also has three volumes of where he begins to establish the blueprint for a state. He says it's not going to be a state al pi din, but a blueprint for a state that won't be shaloi kidin. He says we're not in a position to establish a state that will be al pi din. Al pi din means you have to have a melech. You have to have bati dinim. Al pi din means you have to be able to pass in these halachas kipshutam. But he wants to be able to have a state that will be shaloi al, that will not go keneged in Torah. So there he writes two or three major concerns after he discusses the idea of giving non-Jews places to live in Eretz Yisrael. He says, number one, that this is before 48. He says, if we're going to get the state, it's going to be by virtue of the permission of the United Nations. And one of the underlying assumptions is going to be that it's going to be a democratic state, that it'll be a non-racist state as the Ummus Olam define it. He writes, can you imagine that we would announce to the world that in our state, non-Jews will not be allowed a place to live? Can you imagine that we'll announce to the world that churches or mosques will not be allowed to be established in our state? He writes, Lo yimtza rav sheyesh lo moach. You won't find the rabbi who was a head and the shoulders who would be willing to say that publicly now. And he says that is part of our understanding that is part of the deal of the establishment of the state. It's part of the tenoma. So now, once that's a condition of the establishment of the state, so we have to move forward, even according to Shitas HaRambam, even if they hold it not Gevrei Toshav. But we can't establish principles that are non-democratic principles in the state. It's what we call a pragmatic religious Zionism. It's an approach. And then he writes, so, and he's very rigorous. He says, so maybe you'll say that we should turn down the state. So we won't have it. We can't have a state, and if we're going to have a state, and we can't follow halacha. So we should. He says, well, but you can't do that because if we don't have a state, we're not going to have a place for Jews to run to, for Jews to go to. And this is right after the war, because the pikuach nefesh of Klal Yisrael demand that you set up a state, even if it means that the state cannot be set up entirely al pi din. He says, if we would announce to the world that in the Jewish state you can't have churches, you can't have mosques, and you can't have non-Jewish residents, So can you imagine how the redifus is going to cause Jews all over the world? How we're going to be persecuted in Chutz Laretz? He says, for that alone. He says, and then he has 3 points where he says, so again, you'll ask me, is it worth setting up the state? So he says, number one, we're going to be able to redeem parts of Israel, give Eretz Yisrael Jewish ownership. So it doesn't make sense to say, I'm not going to give Eretz Yisrael overwhelming Jewish ownership because in some spots I'll have to cede to non-Jews. Number two, he says, with the Kiddush Shem Shemayim, then once the Jews get a state, then the prestige of the Jewish people will be raised tremendously. For that, Kiddush Shem Shemayim is worthwhile. And number three, he says, what's the reason why we can't give of a Zaronix a place in Eretz Yisrael? Because we're afraid they'll have a Shpa on the Jews. Right? He says, well, so it's ludicrous. We would turn down the state, so the Jews will be all over the world, so they'll be in non-Jewish societies, they'll be tremendously impacted by non-Jews because we're afraid that in our Jewish state, we're not going to allow certain Jews to live with certain non-Jews because they'll influence Jews. It's a ludicrous cheshbon. And then he finishes off with another major sheet where he says that all these halachos of what Rabbi Hoffman was saying before, Yad Yisrael Tekifa, he says, that's when we have a state with a king running it. But when we don't have a state with a king running it, so we are really, should be considered to be running a state b'shutfus, in partnership. Is we got the state because of the United Nations. And therefore, we are really running a shutfus with non-Jews. We're not running a state al-Fidin. He says, and since we're not running a state with a melech, therefore, these halachos are not incumbent upon us. So again, the issue raises a larger issue, and that's what I wanted to develop in this year, and that is that it raises this an entire approach of Rav Herzog to look at the state as a state that is being run with a certain, that is limited by the those who granted the license for the state to be established. We'll finish up with this. Is the Gemara in Shavuos, we can discuss it at a different time, that says in Yavos HaMashiach, it says that Kadosh Baruch Hu took a Shavua, that Shelo Yalu B'choma, that we will not force our way into Eretz Yisrael. And that's one of the bases for the anti-Zionist approach of the Sadmer Hasidim. On the other hand, so the approach of, I wouldn't say Rav Kook per se, but many of the groups around Rav Kook is, that well, after the Balfour Declaration and after the United Nations gave us the state, we're no longer forcing our way in. So the same Gemara, which is the censure against the establishment of the state, that's the same Gemara which is a license for the state. And Rav Herzog's approach would be that the fact that we receive the state by virtue of non-Jewish approval, that's the way Kadosh Baruch Hu worked it out, that's the limiting factor that really defines what the state is. The same Gemara is the source for the anti-Zionist view, is the source for the religious Zionist view, and it's the source for the religious pragmatic Zionist view of Rav Herzog. Again, a shakar for all those who are learning, especially in finals week. Thank you for the opportunity to look at the sugya together.
So Cook says that. Cook. Yeah.